The Buchanan branch of the American Protective League, better known as the APL, continues to urge residents to report all suspicious activity to the group's headquarters at the Chamber of Commerce on Willow Street. As a reminder, typical enemy behavior includes the following tendencies: food hoarding, interference with the draft, slackers who refuse to enlist for military duty, refusal to purchase liberty bonds, possession of books, sheet music, and phonograph albums celebrating German culture, speaking in a language other than English, the use of hyphenated nationalities when describing oneself, for example, German-American, Polish-American, etc., anti-war sentiments, the production of socialist pamphlets and newspapers, and the discussion of unionization among factory workers. The APL states that this country's best defense against espionage and other war-related crimes involves everyday Americans monitoring the loyalty of their neighbors. We encourage each Buchanan citizen to do his part in chasing the dangerous specter of Germany out of Illinois, said local APL Chief Charles Williams. We command every single individual who takes it upon himself to cleanse the country of the enemy. Buchanan Sentinel, October 4, 1918. Chapter 1. I admit, I had seen a ghost or two. The childhood night my mother's father died, when silver moonlight graced the floorboards and the antique furniture in our front room, I came upon my granny Letty, gone 1 year and a month, rocking in my mother's chair, next to the upright piano. Uncle Bert, gone since 1896, stood on our front porch at sundown on Independence Day 1912. The bitter smoke of his fat cigar stole through the metal screen of our front door, spoiling the aroma of Mama's cherry pie. A half hour after he left, we received a telephone call from my cousin, saying my Aunt Eliza had died of appendicitis. Uncle Bert again smoked on our porch the day my brother Billy was shot in the Battle of San Miguel in September 1918. I likely don't need to mention that these uninvited guests were not welcome sights. My mother saw them too, and she agreed that such visits always signaled loss. Their presence suggested that the wall dividing the living and the dead had opened a crack, and one day that crack might steal us away to the other side. Granny Letty paid another call to our house October 4, 1918. I saw her but a moment, standing in the yellow haze of twilight near the lace curtains of my bedroom, just an hour before my father and brother killed a man. Our front door blew open and whacked the wall. The dogs barked. Someone groaned in pain. Mama's bare soles hurried down the staircase.
What on earth happened?
She asked, her voice coming as a muffled shriek beyond the walls of my upstairs bedroom. I rubbed at my forehead, finding my skin covered in sticky sweat. Spurred on by the panic surging through the house, I managed to climb out of bed after 3 days spent on my back with the flu. My legs buckled. I grabbed hold of my bedside table and knocked copies of Motion Picture Magazine and Emily Dickinson's poems to the floor with thumps and smacks and the wild fluttering of pages. The stripes of my brown and yellow wallpaper blurred and rippled before my eyes.
What happened?
Shouted Mama again from down below. I pushed myself upright, fetched my robe from the back of my door, and eased my way down the staircase on the legs of a feeble old woman, not feeling at all like a 25-year-old young lady used to farm work and activity. To keep my balance, I clung to the rail with both hands, as if clutching the helm of a sinking ship. Down in the front room, my father guided my 17-year-old brother, Peter, toward the kitchen by half-dragging the boy beneath his armpits. Peter's right fist swelled and purpled and no longer looked like a human hand. Something dark lined the crevices in his knuckles and stained father's overalls. The two of them resembled each other with such chilling similarity at the moment.